Rejection is never easy, especially when it comes to the H-1B visa lottery. Fortunately, our friends at Mob Squad have a solution to help you stay in North America, eliminate U.S. work visa issues for good, and continue supporting your current company. Mob Squad can secure work permits and help you and your family move to Canada in just 4 weeks. Get in touch with Mob Squad to learn more at mobsquad.io/blindambition. That's mobsquad.io/blindambition. Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend, Rick from Blind, and today I'm going to introduce you all to Valerie Beaulieu, who's the Chief Sales and Marketing Officer and member of the Executive Committee of the Adecco Group. She was previously Chief Marketing Officer at Microsoft US, leading the marketing function across the region's B2B portfolio. Her career at Microsoft spanned 24 years, during which she held various senior leadership roles across North America, Asia, and Europe. Valerie is also the Vice President of the French Foreign Trade Advisors and a director and board member of the French multinational telecommunications company, Orange. The Adecco Group is the world's leading talent company. Through its three global business units, Adecco, Acadis, and LHH, across 60 countries, the company enables sustainable and lifelong employability for individuals, delivers digital and engineering solutions to power the smart industry transformation, and empowers organizations to optimize their workforces. Thanks for coming on the show, Valerie.
Thank you for having me.
Can you walk us through your career?
Of course. So as you mentioned, I'm the Chief Sales and Marketing Officer for the Adecco Group, which I joined 3 years and a half ago. Since last April, I'm also the president of Pontoon, which is one of the subsidiary of the group. I joined the group, as you mentioned, after 30 years in the tech industry, 24 at Microsoft. And before that, I need to say I was a journalist, as curious as it may sound. I was very lucky during all my career to travel the world, as you mentioned. I am originally French, as maybe you can pick into my accent. But I've lived in the US, I've lived in Singapore, I've lived in London. So all these many places that is really attracting my own curiosity also of living abroad. Also, I got very interested to add many pivots in my career. As I mentioned, I started as a journalist, I did communication, I did marketing, I was a sales leader, I was a chief operating officer, I was a managing P&L. So I think there is also, I was very blessed and I am very grateful for all these opportunities that I've got all along my career. That's me.
Well, Valerie, all right. Rick and I both, I guess we could say we're journalists, right? We, you know, write for Forbes, Rick writes for Blind and for other publications. How do you make that pivot? Because that seems like a wild pivot to go from a journalist to go into tech and then to go into heading up marketing.
So it started when I was very young. And you know, when you're younger, you have these dreams and sometimes even a myth around some jobs. My dream job was becoming a journalist. I was dreaming about telling these fantastic stories about all that was happening in the world. And so I started my career first in the radio space, that will tell you about my age. And then I went to printed newspaper. So I've never worked in the internet per se. But then I realized it was really feeding my curiosity, journalism. I also love to write, love to tell stories. But I was feeling a bit frustrating to see all these people being out there impacting the world in a way or another, whether they're small world or the bigger world. And I was just there telling the story. So I felt it was time for me to jump over the fence and to be on the side of the people doing. So that's how I made my first pivot. It was wild because obviously I was coming with a journalist diploma and I knew nothing about marketing. This was an interesting move.
Well, is there a connection? And Rick, because you're in the same boat a little bit. So is that dovetailed into marketing and sales?
Absolutely. I think storytelling has become more and more a key attribute of good marketing. I would say of good sales as well. It's all about how you tell the story and how you listen to the need from your clients and you really tell the story of how you can help them. I would say more importantly is all that relates to curiosity as well, because I realized that as I grew and developed in my career, one of the common thread was to go to the new things and to constantly learn new skills. You know, I had to learn from being a journalist to becoming a marketing person, from being a marketing person to becoming a salesperson, then to become a leader. I think this concept for me of the backpack, that's really the image I have. I started my career with an empty backpack. Well, some diplomas, some graduation, and we know that in the world of today, what you've learned at school will bring you so far in your career. You need to be constantly learning to stay current. And so the idea of having that backpack, I started with knowing how to be curious, ask questions, how to tell a story. Then I went to marketing, how to drive an impact from these stories. Then I went to sales, how to use curiosity to ask questions to your clients, et cetera, et cetera. And filling my backpack with a tool set that will enable me and accompany me all along my career.
So when you first made that pivot to marketing, do you recall like what you were doing, like, let's say for Microsoft? Do you remember what kind of campaigns you were running?
Oh, yes. When I joined Microsoft, I was a young marketeer. And just to give you a sense, Microsoft at the time was 60 people in Europe. It was the very early days. And when I was running marketing, I was doing the mouse campaign in the morning. I was doing the Windows launch at lunchtime. And I was working on all that was becoming the Bill Gates Foundation. At the time, it was not the Bill Gates Foundation. It was all the corporate impact that Microsoft was driving, and I was doing this at nights. The breadth of topic, you could argue, was not even marketing. It was much broader than that because we were still in startup mode, and all that we have to cover was really fun.
It just to get some context, at that time, not only from in Europe, but in the US, what size was Microsoft at that particular time when you started?
When I started, Europe was only 60 people. Right. We were launching the website. There was the Microsoft.com website was in its infancy. That was a very exciting moment. And I need to say that's also something along my career that probably was a red thread, is going to the new things, the new frontiers. When I joined the tech industry, this was still a very nascent industry. All my friends who were doing marketing, they were all going to, you know, the big Procter & Gamble and Nestle, et cetera, Unilever of the world. These were the hype brands. You were going to the consumer brands. And so it was absolutely not hype to go work for a tech company, which was doomed to be all engineers and very boring tech talks. But this has become something that has changed over time, and I've learned so much about the industry and how you make it interesting. That was an amazing experience.
Picking on your analogy of the backpack and how empty it might have felt when you moved over from West France to tech industry, the B2B side, was there a mentor or something along the way that really inspired you and kind of pushed you and made that transition a little bit easier? Because going from one of the top newspapers in France to something that is just getting started can be quite challenging.
That's a very good question. And I need to say, no. I was just in my early 20s and I knew nothing. I was so new. And at the time at school, they didn't tell you, well, to manage your career, you need to have a mentor, you need to have like your board of directors, etc. When you're in your 20s, you're just like, okay, I want to do something different. You look at the newspaper and you go to the next job. So that was how I did my first pivot from journalism to the tech industry. By the way, my family was like, we have no clue what the tech industry is. There was really no one I could ask. Even my friends, they didn't have computers. They didn't know what email was. So it was really a jump into the unknown. I need to say, because I was being provocative and maybe a bit playful, in my next pivot, I absolutely understood that I needed to have some advice. And so over time, I did had mentors. And you mentioned in the generous presentation you did of my career that I also pivoted from different geographies. That's another type of pivot. When you pivot from being a French person living in France, working in France, to becoming a French person moving across the ocean, and actually I moved to Seattle, so even across the continent, to take a worldwide role, that's a completely different pivot and a completely different dimension. And this is where I did feel that having mentors that I could consult, having my board of directors to help me think through the pros and the cons, which I didn't have that support when I was in my 20s. But here, having these people that could help me and also support me, you know, having these cheerleaders, because I was still relatively young in my career. And I think there was also that doubt, am I able? Am I capable? And what I found super interesting is that having this board of directors who would not only advise me on, yes, this is a good opportunity, but also cheering me, saying, we trust you, you're going to do it, you're going to make it. I think this was absolutely critical for me.
So let me unpack some of this, because this is a lot. How did you go from France to Seattle? That's huge. Did you know anybody there? Said, all right, I'm going there and I'm building, you know, a new life here.
Yeah. Moving from one country to the other, I was already a mom with two kids and obviously my husband. This was a process. Actually, I would, unless you're very young in career, like I did when I moved from journalism to marketing, I would advise from making the jump without thinking through what you're doing, because it has an impact beyond your own individual person. Here, I was impacting my entire family who moved with me to the US, notwithstanding the fact that my husband had to resign to join me. So the first thing we did was we did a family council. So can you imagine, my kids were 12 and 10, and we did that family council. Okay, we're going to move to the US. What does it mean at a personal level? To your point, these questions of where are we going to live? Are we going to have a house? Are we going to have a yard? Where are we going to go to school? The kids were asking, though they were not really asking. We provoked the conversation. Do we have to speak English to go to school in the US? So having that family council for me was super important, because if you want to be very effective as a leader and as a professional, you need to make sure that you have a strong anchor in your personal life. And for me, that was very important, because I've seen colleagues who moved to the US didn't spend the right amount of time to align their family or their support. Sometimes it's just your friends on how you're going to support the move. And then it turns out a total disaster, because you have to learn a new job, a new network of colleagues. Even in my case, it was in the same family. If at home your family is unhappy or your support system is unhappy, you won't be supported. Making sure that you take care of the environment so that you can be 200% in your career was critical for me.
In Seattle, you took on worldwide marketing, right?
Yes, I had one intermediary step, which was also an interesting story. Before taking on the marketing role in the US subsidiary, I was working in the advertising business. I moved because I was on the bench to replace the chief operating officer for that division of Microsoft. So I was there for the first 6 months, and my boss left the company. And the boss of my boss at the time opened the role, and I was like, oh, I'm just 6 months in the role. It's too early. I've just moved from France to the US. I'm just getting my insurance rights. I just got my driving license. You know, I'm still in the throes of figuring out my personal life. And the job becomes empty. This is the job that was the reason why I moved to the US in the first place. It was because I was on the bench to take that role. And here I am thinking, too early, I'm not capable enough. I started to talk to some of my board of directors, my mentors, and say, yeah, you're capable, you're fantastic, you can do a good job. But still, I was doubting myself. I was looking in my backpack. Yeah, I probably had a solid backpack by the time, but still, I wouldn't go there. And it had to take the boss of my boss, who came to see me and say, why aren't you applying? This job is for you. Why aren't you applying? And it really took him to say, yeah, I want you. That's why he's gone. So that's the promise that we made to you. We got you to the US to take that job. Just apply. And so that's how I became the chief operating officer of the advertising team in the US.
Wow. I want to dive a little bit deeper there in terms of spending more than 20 years at Microsoft. The way you describe it, it seems like a quite linear, straight line in terms of almost like a destiny in terms of the role or leadership you were meant to have. I mean, along the way, can you walk us through some of the pivotal moments in terms of promotions or learnings or gains in like function or expertise along the way?
I would say it may look like linear, but it was not that linear. I'll tell you the story of two moments. The first moment was at the time I was working for Microsoft at European level. And my husband was tired of me traveling all the time. You see, I go back to my personal life because it's always a balance between what's happening in your personal life and your working life. I was having a lot of fun doing this international role at European level. But my husband was like, hey, no, now it's my turn to take an international role. You go national. So I love Microsoft. I look for a job in the French subsidiary, and there was a job that was completely along my capability. I apply and I don't get the job. And they tell me, no, we don't get you because you are an external recruit, because I was coming from Europe. You see, even in these big companies, sometimes there is also like you have to apply for a job. And so they prefer a people that were already in the French subsidiary. Then the next role that came up was a role where I felt that I was totally overqualified. I was managing the full marketing for Microsoft at European level. And that role was just to report to the person who was managing marketing for just small business. And I was like, I'm going to be bored after 2 minutes. And I didn't feel that I was arrogant. It was just that the role was scoped in so much smaller than what I was managing. And this is when I went to my mentor. We were talking about the importance of the role of the mentor. And he told me a piece of wisdom that at the time I had a hard time to believe, but thank God he was here to convince me. He said, you know, sometime in a career, it's good to take a step down to rebound even faster. Okay, that sounds like, you know, wisdom, but I don't see the truth into that. I'm just gonna, you know, I'm throwing all that I have in my backpack and just taking a step down. And his point of view was, yes, but wait a minute. You don't know the conditions of the French subsidiary. You don't know the people. They don't know you. They don't know if you're capable. So you also need to learn how to work in this new environment. There will be other people that are important, other stakeholders. And if it's easy for you to do that because it's really within your capabilities, you will have plenty of time to first be 100% successful and maybe do stretch project that will get you, you know, in a good bias towards the next. That's exactly what happened. I followed his advice. I took this job, which was on paper much smaller than the role that I was having at European level. After 18 months, I was promoted because I was overperforming in my role. I have taken so many stretch projects that I was immediately identified as a, you know, fast growing talent. I got actually promoted twice, first to be the chief operating officer of that division, and then to be the head of sales and marketing for that division. And that's why sometimes words of wisdom and the linearity, sometimes it's good also to reflect and take a step back to just accelerate further.
I imagine there has to be some kind of courage behind being willing to take that quote unquote lower step, because it almost seems counterintuitive, right? That you have to go down to go up, to leapfrog. I mean, are there other kind of things that surprised you in terms of these kind of career truisms or lessons that, people have taught you or shared with you that you didn't immediately see kind of where it might lead?
This one was a big lesson for me. Yes, sometimes you need to take a step down to reaccelerate. Another thing that surprised me, even within the same corporation, changing role, and I've changed role multiple times, probably every 3-4 years I was changing roles. And usually it was a process like 5, 6, 7, sometimes to 10 interviews to get to the next role. And there was this one time, actually after that stellar career that I had in the French subsidiary that I've just told you about, where I was ready for a move. And so I called one of the vice president that I really admire, a woman who was at the time the head of Spain, and she had just become the vice president for a big division, the big consumer division in Europe. And I just call her and I say, hey, I'm looking for my next move. I would love to work with you. I really admire the work that you do. Just checking in if there is anything that could come up in your remit. She said, oh, great. I'm opening my chief of staff role. This will become my CEO. Are you ready to join? Yes. Okay. Yes. Shall I call you? Shall I talk to your assistant for an interview? He said, no, no, it's okay. Can you start Friday? That's it. So this was this one occasion where I got the role literally on a phone call. This happened only once to me. The lesson is, you should always nurture your network, because this was a lady that I've known over my time at Microsoft. She knew what I was doing. I was always in touch with her. We were just close professionally. You never know when there will be an opportunity like that, when she was desperate to have someone very quick. And when I call her, it was just the right call at the right moment to the right person. I got the job in 3 days. And so I think this power of the network is just incredible. I had another story like that, though not completely as fast, but when I moved to Singapore, it was similar. I also gave a phone call to people that I know in my network, and they gave me the opportunity. I remember I talked to that guy who was the president of Asia at 8:30 for breakfast. He said, okay, at 10 a.m., can you talk to the guy who can recruit you? And I remember calling my husband at 9 o'clock saying, okay, I may have a proposal to move to Singapore. Are you in? Because at 10, I may have to say yes. And my husband is playful. He said, okay, let's do it. And so at 10, I had the first interview. It was a slightly longer process, but just to tell you that sometimes the power of a network can create acceleration that you don't expect.
So let's talk about that for a little bit in terms of the network. And you talk about a board of directors. For some people, they feel uncomfortable networking. You hear networking and it has that ick feeling, like, you know, you're going into a meeting with the, you know, your tag on your lapel and a sweaty handshake. What can people do? And maybe you could share with the audience, because you seem to be very fluid in doing this and very comfortable. A lot of people aren't. How do you develop the muscles to network, reach out to strangers, you know, make people like you, become charismatic? What's the secret?
Well, I don't know if I am fluent on networking. Mm-hmm. But one thing that is sure, I'm curious about others, probably coming from my journalist original experience, and I'm genuinely curious about people. So when I network, first, I don't think I'm networking. I'm just curious about knowing others. I'm just curious about who are you? What do you do? Where are you coming from? What are your interests? And that's how you just get proximity and create proximity with people, by just being genuinely interested about them. You'd be surprised. And I'm also a mentor to a lot of my mentees, and I'm encouraging them to do networking. I am yet to see someone who doesn't want to talk about them, who is not proud about what they do. Usually when you ask people about, what are you doing? Where do you live? What do you love? Where are you coming from? And then one question leading to the other, people are usually happy to talk about them. And that's how you create that proximity. I remember one day I was talking to this guy who was from South Africa. We were in a big training session. So we just got to know each other, the usual, like, hey, what's your name? What do you do? How long have you been in the company? Do you have kids? What do you love? Yeah, I love sailing. Oh, me too. Or no, I prefer doing yoga. And guess what? This guy, years later, the guy is from South Africa. There is no link to my business. I'm in Europe at the time. We have zero link. He's in a space that is not my space. We're not working together at all. 5 years later, this is the 31st of December. It's closing time for Microsoft. I have to get all my contracts in so that my bonus will be counted. And so my contracts are slightly smaller than the big guys. So I need to ask a favor. And so I look at the guys who are processing all the contracts, who is the head of that team, that guy from South Africa.
No way.
Guess what? I give him a call. and say, hey, how are you doing? And we talk about the old days. I say, hey, I have a big favor to call. Can you put my contract on top of the pile? So you never know. We just became friends at the training. And I think that's probably the secret of networking. You don't network thinking this is going to be useful one day. You network because you're genuinely interested in the person, and you create a rapport that it will come back one day or another.
I love it. I found out over the years, particularly with recruiting, tell me if this makes sense. Rick, you probably see this too as a PR person, is that most people, no one really asks them about what they do. Do you enjoy what you do? And ask those questions. So when you do, and you actually listen to the person, then they love you because like, wow. Because if I come home and I'm going to speak to my wife and kids, they have zero interest in hearing what I have to talk about. Right? But other people, when they start talking about it, they light up, right? They're like so excited that someone cares about me and someone wants to hear about my day and what I'm doing. That's like a powerful tool, isn't it? It gets people to really gravitate towards you.
100%. I totally agree. It's about this genuine curiosity in the other person, humanity. And I sometimes pompously am saying I'm a humanist. I am fascinated by every human. Like I found everyone fascinating. Everybody has a fascinated story, and I'm genuinely curious about each other's humanity. And for me, that's all. Maybe I was a journalist because I'm interested in others.
I really appreciate that reminder in humanism.
This episode of The Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly is brought to you by BetterHelp. For anyone out there who needs to hear this, you are more than your job. Don't get us wrong. Passion for your work is great, but it's so important to find joy, fulfillment, and validation in your life as a whole, not just at work. And therapy can help you get there. We all go through ups and downs in our career. Maybe you're thinking about switching career paths, or you're feeling super burned out in your job. You might be struggling with the uncertainty of our current economy, or trying to manage the anxiety that can come up during the job interview process. Whatever it is, you're not alone, and therapy can help. Therapy gives you a place to talk through what's going on at work in a safe and supportive environment, figure out what goals you have for your life and career, and build the confidence to go out and make them happen. Otherwise, it's easy to stick with the same old, even if it's not making you happy. If you're interested in giving therapy a try, BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a flexible week-to-week schedule so you can fit it into your day. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get started, then BetterHelp will match you with a licensed therapist based on your needs, preferences, and goals. Connect with your therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Elevate your work and your life with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/teamblind for 20% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/teamblind for 20% off your first month.
Just piggybacking off the Microsoft, but about 3 years ago, you moved over to Adecco. Maybe you could share a little bit of what Adecco is about and what you're doing currently at Adecco.
The Adecco Group is one of the world leader of HR solutions. We cover the entire spectrum of HR services, from helping on recruitment, whether it is for temp worker, permanent workers, but also everything that has to do with career mobility, upskilling, reskilling, consulting in the tech areas. So we're really covering the full spectrum. What really attracted me, and we talked about career pivots, this was another big pivot to get out of 30 years of the tech industry into the HR solution. And I did talk to my board of directors. I did look into my backpack. I reached out to my network. So I think everything we're talking about was at play into my last pivot. But in the end, there is a point, and maybe this is the Maslow pyramid. You know, you get into some different place as you grow as a professional. First, you're craving for recognition. Well, you're craving first for money, because you don't have the money. So once you have the money, you're craving for recognition. And then there is a point where you're ready to just give back. So what I was really looking for is purpose. What I really love about the Adecco Group is that we are very strongly anchor into our impact on society, ensuring that we provide everybody the dignity of work, that we make the future work for everyone. They can get a job that they love, they can live fulfilling life and growing in their jobs. So I was really, really attracted with that societal impact that we were driving as a company. The other thing that was really interesting for me is I've learned so much when I was in the tech industry. One of the things that was really striking is that I was always selling digital transformation, digital transformation, digital transformation. And what my clients were struggling with was not so much the tech. What they were struggling with is, how do I take advantage of all these new tools in my company to realize a business benefit, whether to grow my business or to be more efficient? The main blocker to really realize the potential of digital transformation was actually people. And that's what the Adecco Group is really taking care of, is to make sure that your organization is ready to embrace whatever change is coming at you. And we know there's been a lot of crises that we had to look at in the recent years. I think this also power of impacting what's critical for the enterprise was also very attractive to me. Then the other pivot for me was, I've learned so much again in my career as a salesperson, as a marketing person, as driving operations, driving P&Ls. I felt I could also help the industry to transform in my very little modest way, because when you think about the industries in the general economy, the HR solution has remained very pivoted on the individual relationship, not so much automated. I felt there was a lot that I could bring also in how we could go to the next level of also embracing technology, and AI is one of the big hype at the moment, but we've been doing this for quite a while at the Adecco Group to make sure that we get the technology to support the mission that we have. I feel very good about that pivot. A lot of people are telling me, how is it to move from 30 years in the tech industry to move in the HR solution? Well, I'm absolutely fulfilled and excited to be in that mission for the broader benefit of the society.
That makes a lot of sense, because also 30 years of doing something, it's time for change. And I see that's part of your story, is like you've constantly looking for changes, whether it's going to Singapore, or going to Seattle, or what have you. I think, Rick, what do you think about this too? By moving around, maybe that would keep you fresh and keeps building a network, because you're not just static at one place.
I agree. And I think also what experience has told me is that especially in the current environment, and that has been accelerated in the recent years, there's no such thing as a fixed role with a fixed set of skills forever. Actually, all this acceleration of the multiple crises like COVID and then supply chain after the war and the multiple crises that are unfortunately coming up at us, we need to be constantly fresh in our skills, being curious to constantly learn and don't stay stuck in the status quo, but really looking at, okay, what else do I need to learn? Can I transpose a learning from one place to the other and being constantly curious? This is also something that we see with our own clients in the Adecco Group, where the big question they have is, how do I keep my workforce current? Because I need to constantly transform my processes.
So in a way, you're a trendsetter, because what I see now with the Gen Zs, they'll move around a lot. And I remember when I first started working, and let's say in recruiting, if I sent a resume to a hiring manager and they were only there for a year or two, the hiring manager said, Jack, what are you doing? Like, this person is a job hopper. And they really wouldn't even want to meet the person. Now, fast forward, it's like, keep moving, keep learning, keep, you know, meeting new people. So it sounds like one of the takeaways from your career journey is that don't be afraid to keep trying something new and different, whether it's a different city, a different country, you know, a different type of organization. And the more you do these things and push yourself out of the comfort level, you learn and grow. It does have to be a little, I imagine for yourself, it had to be scary at times to take these big leaps. But then after you do it, you probably feel like wonderful and invincible that you like were able to do this great thing.
I don't think that I feel invincible, but I certainly feel that I feel my backpack quite a bit. Mm. And I think, Rick, you were talking earlier about linear career. If there is something that was not me, is I never started thinking one day I will be whatever. you know, CEO, chief sales and marketing officer, I never set on a path to say, this is where I want to go. What I wanted to do is fill in my backpack with experience that will build on each other, be complementary. I wanted to have a backpack that will become my superpower. My experiences were building on each other. And that's also something that even though I didn't have like a destination, what I wanted to make sure was that I was filling my backpack with things that will build on each other. So always having something that I could bring into the role. So it was, I never hopped from one role where I knew nothing about the geography, knew nothing about the job, knew nothing about the company. There was always an anchor that I was bringing with me. When I moved to the US, for example, the only thing that I was changing was the environment because I knew the job. The job I knew because I moved with the job. When I moved to Singapore, same story, I also knew the job that I was going after. When I moved to being the chief operating officer of the advertising business, there was already one good third of the role that I master. So I had to learn only two thirds. I think making sure that in your backpack, you have enough anchor so that you don't have to learn 100% at the same time, for me was also critical, and probably more critical than just having a destination and trying to get to that destination.
Wow. I'm so impressed because, you know, all these companies, they invest so much in terms of, you know, talent development, having really clear job ladders, these performance reviews and evaluations to help guide people along. They make it seem these are the expectations at this certain level. And to your point, it's more about what the skills and functional areas of expertise, the domains, the relationships, the network that you're building that become more important. You know, how did you discover that in terms of kind of breaking that mold of this kind of easy formula that a lot of these companies, they want to share with you?
I think one is not exclusive of the other, because I've been extremely blessed and supported in my career at Microsoft by all the programs they have in place. And we have in place in the Adecco Group as well to support top talent. Filling the backpack was also a factor of the training I was lucky to be attending and the coaching I was receiving. It's actually complementary. I want to also be very clear. There is some of my own merit and my own courage, certainly, but there is a lot that was facilitated by the company also gave me the chance to have this experience. So, and I would say still today, the majority of the company continues to think about career as a ladder, exactly what you described. So you start at the bottom and you grow the ladder. Where we are today, and we're doing tons of research in the Adecco Group, and I think I am one of these examples, actually the ladder doesn't work. Like, it's not because you are a junior marketer that you will become in 25 years the top chiefs and sales marketing, chief marketing officer if you just grew up the ladder. It's very likely that a better marketing officer will be someone who will be filling the backpack, acquiring skills along the way in something that will be much more messy to bring the most value in the top job. But today it was really, how do I understand the progression of people is from starting junior and finishing senior. So very much vertical. I think what AI is going to empower is the true skills economy, where you are going to judge the capability of the people and their ability to perform by the skills they're acquiring in a journey that will be much messier, I would say. And so back to my backpack. What do they bring into their backpack into the role?
I want to dig in there. It almost seems like there's a lane, and it seems like to become an executive, it's almost like a race to who gets there fastest. As you developed in your career over time and you landed these executive roles with larger and larger scope, how did you add to your responsibility? How did you demonstrate that impact along the way? That showed others it's okay for me to take this on, or you're right to give me these extra projects or this added scope along the way.
It's probably two things. The first thing is there's no shortcut. You need to perform in your job and you need to work hard. Let me start with that, because I some people may say, okay, what's the secret sauce? Can we just with a few network? No, the first thing you bring to the party is your performance. Like the fact that you drove successfully project, that you drove business back to growth, your impact is your first proof points. If you show that, and then you have the right network, people knowing about that, and you have also sponsors, people who can talk about you when you were not in the room, which is very usually a bifactor of the impact that you've driven, I think that's the other element. And there is a third element, which sometimes people forget, which is your own behavior. Because you could be a fantastic performer, but be a total jerk. Sometimes we say you recognize a leader, even if it's not a manager, because you have people who are able to drive clarity on the path forward, even if they're not themselves manager and they really manage through influence. I think these three elements of, do you have the track record that shows that you are somebody who delivers on whatever you're given? You have the right level of network that knows you, that understand what you can deliver, that can be your sponsor in some elements. And then you have the right attitude. You're curious, you're open, you're collaborative, you're authentic. I think for a leader, that's a key trait as well, the authenticity. I think these are probably the three elements that will make the right package.
On that note, do you have any advice for the professional that's the middle of their career? They might see some members of their team seem to be schmoozing their way to the top, or, you know, getting through in terms of politics. For that person that might be frustrated in that messy middle, what would you say to that person in terms of how they can continue on in their career?
I've not been interested in how others reach whatever means. So I think that's not the point. Just stay focused on what you do and who you are. And I want to spend just a minute on who you are, because it took me a while in my career to determine for myself, do I really know where is my passion? Because what we need to distinguish, and that was also a word of wisdom from one of my manager, is there are things you're good at. For example, I'm good at numbers. I'm super fluent with Excel. I do my own pivot tables. So people would use me for analytics and stuff. And then one of my manager came and see me and he said, you know what, you need to decide what you really want to do, because else people will drive you. It made me think about, yeah, I know I'm good with numbers, but do I want to be in finance? No, that's not my passion. Where do you get your flow? And your flow is, where are the things that you can spend hours? And you just look at the clock and say, oh my, it's been 2 hours, you're happy. Not only you're good at it, but you love it. What I've been striving is, how do I converge what I'm good at and what I love doing? When you are there, it's nirvana. Because this is where, you know, this famous phrase, like, you no longer have a job, you just have your own passion. So, but when you are younger in career, you are still trying to discover, okay, I know I'm good at that, so is it who I am? Well, maybe no, you're here, you're someone else, and you need to reconcile your passion with what you're good at and to reach that fulfillment in your job.
Yeah, that's great advice for anybody. I love that, because when you're not in the flow, and sometimes then you have to realize, maybe I'm just not in the right career, not in the right job. Because when you are in the flow and you're in the zone, it's like, it's awesome. It's like a beautiful thing to watch. So I love that. And maybe that's a good also metric for people to see. If you have it, then you know you're maybe in the right place. And if you don't, perhaps maybe you have to start looking for something else. You don't like numbers and you're not passionate about numbers. Let's move. Let's try something different.
Valerie, I really appreciate you opening up through sharing your career story, your career arc, and inviting us to be having you join our personal board of directors. So thanks for coming on the show, Valerie.
Thank you, Valerie. This is awesome.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.